This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. We have a special guest with us today, one of my very good friends, and Sean's, I should say, sorry, not just mine, Phil Owen. Phil, how are you doing? Owen, sorry. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to see you guys.
Nice to see you as well. And I have so much, I want you to share so much with us today on the inspection side of things, but I wanted to get into your introduction real quick. So Phil is a trusted leader in the single family residential property management industry, specializing in property awareness. As the CEO of OnSite Pros, Phil has focused on raising the bar in single family rentals with professional property managers. With 10 years experience in systems development and personal management, Phil excels at streamlining existing processes, finding efficiencies, and creating accountability and consistency. This results in lowered stress, risk, and maintenance costs for property managers and landlords, helping property managers save time, save money, and rest easy. So again, I mean, Phil, thank you so much for joining us here today. Why don't you get a little into how you got started with this business? Give us a little background on yourself.
Yeah, I actually, you know, it's funny. My degree is in philosophy, so clearly a natural lead in to property management, property awareness, right? And my actual background is in telecommunications. I was in fiber optics for a little over a decade. I actually lived in San Antonio, Texas, and a good friend of mine is a guy named James Alderson. And I was about to move back to East Tennessee, and he said, you know, hey, look, I've got this little business and I'm wanting to expand it. As you move back, could you find anybody that might help me with that? And he sat down and he started telling me about this company he had started called OnSite Pros. And I sat and started listening to him. I was like, hey, I would like to be a part of that. And so I jumped into business with James about 14 years ago. And then in May of 2019, I actually purchased the company from him with a group of investors. And he has ridden off into the sunset to spend time with the grandkids and be able to just focus on his property management company. That's how I got connected with this crazy world of property management.
Yeah, nice. Story. Well, I love the story. And, you know, when we first met, I think we probably met around that time, 2019. And we had actually our in-house people doing our inspections, and it was a lot. And when I met you, I was like, holy cow, like, you just changed my world, you know? And so, yeah, you do a lot for us. And at times you have saved my butt on certain situations. So, tell us a little bit about how you, what you do day to day, what you do for property managers.
And tell us a little bit about OnSite Pros. Yeah. Like, so just so in case our listeners aren't familiar with you, what do you do?
Yeah. So OnSite Pros is a third party, what we would call property awareness company. And our goal is to help you be aware of what is happening at a property through the course of a rental lease from move in and move out to periodic assessments in between. Our goal is to help property managers get professional eyes on the property. For move in and move out, our goal is to take care of security deposit disputes. So you can say, hey, here's what the property looked like when the tenant moved in, and I've got a picture of every square foot of the property. And then at move out, here's what it looked like, and I've got a picture of every square foot of the property. Now, any differences that happened during tenancy, you can say, all right, well, this is who's responsible for that, because it wasn't like that when you moved in and it is now. I'm going to take that out of the security deposit dispute. And we also are going to stop by properties during occupancy to make sure that, you know, the things that are supposed to be happening, like mowing the yard and changing the air filter and, you know, those kind of things are happening. Things that shouldn't be happening, like illicit pets, swing sets, trampolines, those sort of things are not happening. And then to find unreported or unnoticed maintenance or liability type items that will help property managers be aware of what's happening at the property. Our goal is really twofold. One, we want to help property managers be proactive instead of reactive and help you better maintain your properties on behalf of your clients. And two, we want to be able to let property managers, instead of being out in the field all the time, trying to achieve property awareness on your own, outsource it to somebody that's their entire focus, so that you and your team can be back sitting at their command center waiting to take care of landlords, waiting to take care of tenants, and dealing with the kinds of things that make you a great property manager. So we want to empower you to be a better property manager.
That's awesome.
Well said.
Yeah. That's perfect. And it's such a great service that you do provide, and we are very happy clients and love what you do. And you just need to expand to Albuquerque, New Mexico. I don't know how many times we've said that, but
we'll work on that.
Yeah. But I think Joni, one of her questions, and I'm going to steal it, but she wants to know, like, with all the inspections and all the across the country you've done, you have to have some good stories. So we would love to hear, you know, maybe a horror story or
good, bad, and ugly. Yeah. So give it to us, Phil.
Yeah, no, we've had some great stories. In fact, I was just talking to some property managers earlier today and telling them a story of, in Atlanta, Georgia, one time we went into a property and our technician asked the tenant, "Hey, where do you have the air filter? Where is the air filter?" And the tenant said, "Oh, I don't know." And he said, "Oh, does your landlord come by and change it for you?" He's like, "I don't think so." He said, "Hey, how long have you lived here?" He's like, "7 years." Tenant had lived there for 7 years and had never changed an air filter. And when he found the air filter, it was in the garage, and all that was left was the cardboard edging. It was just, there was nothing left. Mm-hmm. And so that HVAC was pretty well toast. You know, we found things like a skateboarding half pipe in a basement.
Wow.
I thought you were going to say in the living room.
Well, the living room would have been better because it would have probably been a higher ceiling. But can you imagine having a skateboarding half pipe with an 8-foot ceiling? That's a death trap.
Wow.
We run into squatters. In fact, last week, one of our technicians called and he's like, "Hey, I just got to this property and the key was not in the key box, but the window was smashed out. And I went in and the oven was open and on full blast. And we think someone was actively trying to burn down the property." It's just crazy the kinds of things that you find and come across, and, you know, may have saved a landlord a property right there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A lot of fun things you run into in this business.
You know, you'll be surprised. I talk to a lot of property, you as well, obviously, but I talk to a lot of property managers, and you'd be surprised how many actually don't do periodic inspections. And that is just, that's doing a disservice to your clients, to you. I mean, it's crazy how many people don't do it. And I mean, I'll tell a couple of stories of how you saved me. I mean, we had a couple of years ago, I think we had a grow house in Conroe, remember? Mm-hmm. And you guys had went out there to inspect it and there was nothing. I pulled up the report, there was nothing on there. And then 2 months later, obviously they're starting to grow house, right?
The house and got raided and they disappeared, of course.
But really, I mean, the owner came back at us and was like, "Hey, like, you know, you didn't tell me that this was going on." And I said, no, we have a report here. And sure enough, she had that report showing that there was no evidence of that, right? So it really does, you know, kind of keep the property managers, you know, hold them to where they don't get in trouble as well. So, I mean, I think it's so much that the property managers, they don't actually go and do the semiannual inspections. It needs to be done.
For such a small cost, right?
Yeah.
The savings and you know, avoiding issues.
And I'll tell you, one of our now clients in Texas there has a story of, you talk about a grow house. He had a property that he was not doing periodic assessments because the tenant always paid on time. The house, you know, outside was immaculate. There was never a maintenance request or a complaint. He was like, everything's great. Until he got called to the house on Christmas Eve and found out that the whole house had been demoed on the inside and a $500,000 home had been a grow house for 3 years. And he had to explain to the owner that he had no idea that was happening because he had never been in the property. And that's a very hard conversation for an owner to accept.
Yes.
But that at least protects you when you're able to go back and go, "Look, I can't be in the property every other week, but I was just there 2 months ago and that wasn't the case. I can't prevent things from happening, but if I'm in the property every 6 months, I'm doing my due diligence and I'm protecting you in every way that can humanly protect you, but I can't live with the tenant, you know?" Yeah.
So a question I had for you.
Nor would you want to in most cases, I suspect.
A question I had for you was, you know, just as business owners, you know, and Joni and I being in just two markets, you know, how do you, because you're in multiple states, multiple markets, cities, how do you manage that effectively? And just maybe some tips of the trade or what you've learned over the years, you know, managing your business across multiple.
Finding the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people obviously has been an enormous challenge. Mm-hmm. Anyone who is in business or around business knows that the labor market has been very, very tight for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And COVID made it substantially tighter as you had a very important demographic, which is your 60 plus folks that pretty well exited the marketplace and went into early retirement. And we've not had the body count to backfill that demographic. And so all businesses have been scrambling for labor. And that's been a real challenge. But what we have found is when you hire for fit and you hire very thoroughly, and when you focus on making sure you're helping people get what they want out of the relationship instead of just getting what you want out of the relationship, listen to what, you know, in the interview process and the training process, listen to what they need and want from the relationship and decide then if you can help them accomplish what they want. Because if you can't, they're not going to be with you for very long.
Right.
You know, if what they're trying to achieve is not what you offer, great that you hired them, but you're spinning your wheels and wasting your time by spending the time training them, because as soon as they get what they're looking for, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So really going through that process and making sure that you're hiring people that they are wanting out of the relationship what you want out of the relationship has been incredibly important for us. And we have geared our interview process to identifying fit. Mm-hmm. But that has become the absolute key word for us in hiring over the last 4 years in a very tight labor market.
Can you go a little deeper? Like, what questions are you asking to find that, to the alignment, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And it really depends on, you know, the position. You know, it's very different if we're hiring, you know, for admin and clerical than if we're hiring for the field. But I can tell you a couple of good examples. So just yesterday, I was talking to one of our market center managers, and, you know, he was telling me, hey, I went through the process, and I asked this gentleman who was coming to work for us what he wanted out of life. What was he looking for professionally? Short term, long term. And, you know, he talked about how he really wanted to get into real estate and possibly into property management. And so for that technician, we might treat him a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And we might say, hey, every month when NARPM hosts a luncheon, why don't you join us at the luncheon? So that not only are you out in the field getting to see the properties and do that, but you're able to come and hear what other property managers are talking about. You're meeting people in the industry and developing some relationships so that the longer you're involved with us, the closer you're getting to your goal. Now, that means that he's got a shelf life with us. But gosh, if you can have somebody who comes and performs with you at a high level for 3 to 5 years, and they're loyal to you because they know that you're investing in them and that you're trying to get them where they're going. There aren't a whole lot of people that we're going to hire to go be, you know, field technicians who are going to work with us until retirement. We have to know that there's an expiration date on our relationship. The question is, how can we make it as beneficial for us and as beneficial for them, mm-hmm, in the time we have together, that's a meaningful relationship for both of us? So when you listen to what people want and you go, can I help them get that? If the answer is yes, you've got someone that you can invest in and build loyalty. And if the answer is no, it's a transactional relationship. They show up and do a job and you give them a paycheck, and that is going to last as long as they don't find a better transactional relationship. Mm-hmm. And right now the market is willing to pay a lot. And so there are going to be opportunities.
Right.
Another good example of that is we hired a gal who had just come out of college, and she had a degree in human resources. And, you know, she had been looking for a job in HR, and she said, gosh, I'm so frustrated because everywhere I apply, they want 3 to 5 years of experience. And I'm going, how do I get 3 to 5 years of experience if nobody will hire me so that I can get experience? And we said, okay, well, HR is not what we're hiring for, but let's hire you for the position that we're hiring for and let you work with HR so that you'll have that on your resume. best case scenario, you fall in love with our company. We grow enough that we're able to sustain you and grow you, and you want to stay with us forever. Worst case scenario, 5 years from now, you've got 5 years of HR experience and you can go get the job that you went to college and want to get. And sure enough, you know, 6 years later, she ended up leaving our company for double what we could pay her. And we high-fived and celebrated her. And she's had three promotions at her new job since she left. Wow. But she spent 6 years making us a better company. Mm-hmm. And we're better because of the time that she was with us. We both got what we needed out of that relationship. And that was a win. So if you can find those things where what they're looking for is the same as what you're looking for, and you can help each other accomplish your goals, you can overcome a tight labor market.
I agree. I love that, how you approach that. And talking about relationships, because I think you do a phenomenal job of building relationships. Does that come natural to you? Do you work at it? How do you approach that?
Yes and yes. It is very natural to me. You know, on the Myers-Briggs, you know, you've got the sliding scale of extrovert to introvert. And I'm like, as far as you can possibly get on the extrovert scale, like, you know, it's pushing on the edge, knocking, wanting off the chart.
Everybody knows Phil. So I'm very much everybody likes Phil.
I'm very much an extrovert, and I draw energy from people. Mm-hmm. And I'm compelled by people's stories. I love to hear what has happened in their lives and how it's led them to where they are and what they've learned from it. Like, I just am very compelled by people's stories. And I find that when you have a genuine interest in people, that people take a genuine interest in you. Right. And that's a reciprocal thing. I used a word a minute ago when I was talking about the hiring process. When people treat relationships as transactional, I don't think you end up with real relationships.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day who, you know, has become very much a friend. And she had been working for a franchise group in the industry. And now she's left that franchise and gone on her own as a consultant. Mm. And she was like, "Hey, I'm not a decision maker in this organization. Are we still friends?" And I'm like, "Our relationship was not contingent upon your ability to impact our business. Like, it's a true, genuine relationship. Now I want to hear about what you're doing and how I can help you accomplish what you want to do as a consultant." Yeah. Because if it's transactional, people are going to feel that and they're going to know that.
Right.
So relationally, it's about having a genuine interest in people. And people see the difference between somebody who actually cares about them and somebody who is using them to get where they want to go. And I think that's one of those things that kind of has to come from the heart.
Right.
You can't decide, I'm going to be relational so that that's still transactional. Mm-hmm. Like, it really has to be a heart thing, that it's the way you feel about people. But I think if your heart is in the right place and you care about people, the relationships you form are rich and valuable.
Awesome.
Love it.
Yeah, love that.
That's why you and I get along so well, by the way.
That's right.
That's why you never see me at those events, because just draws energy out of me.
True.
Sean's on the opposite end of my Briggs to the other side.
Yes.
Correct. So I wanted to know, you're, as we were talking about, you have multiple markets, you know, bigger staff. What metrics do you, as the CEO, are you monitoring? Are you just getting reports from, you know, your general managers? And I'm just curious what
turnaround time. That's what we like to see.
Yeah, no, like how many inspections they complete a week. Like, what are some of your metrics that you're managing across your business and making sure you guys are hitting your goals or KPIs every week?
Yeah, so we have a weekly meeting with our leadership team. And you've mentioned a lot of them. What we look at very closely is the number of jobs that we completed year over year. So in this same week period, how many do we complete this year versus last year? And that tells us if we're growing or if we're shrinking. And we also look at it, and you know, when that number is not favorable, talking about turnaround time, we go back and look at we also look at how many orders we received. Because if there's a disparity where, okay, the number of orders that we received is up, but the number of orders that we completed is down, that means we have a staffing issue. Mm-hmm. That means that we've got plenty of work coming in, but we don't have the adequate staff to fulfill the work that we have. Mm-hmm. So we're measuring, you know, the income and the outflow to make sure that we're having healthy growth on both sides of that equation. We measure quality. We have quality control agents that do quality control reports, and we look at the trend over time. Are we trending in a positive direction? As we give people feedback, is our quality scores going up as they learn more and more what we're looking for? That's a big one that we look at. We do have a report every week from our HR because, I mean, we're a labor company. That's what we do. We're boots on the ground. And so we always get a report about, you know, how many interviews there have been and what percentage we're able to hire to get an idea of, you know, how long is it going to take to fill open positions so that we kind of get a sense of those. Those are some of the important things that we measure. I'll tell you an interesting one that we measure is we call it SASILY, S-A-S-I-L-Y. And that stands for smile and say, I love you.
Yeah.
And that is a big mantra in our call center where we teach them, hey, we always want you to look to do two things in a conversation. One, always smile. Because even if you're on the phone or typing, people can sense mm-hmm. the voice. People can sense the tone of your text. If you will smile, it rewires your brain and you'll communicate different. And some people consider that weird and creepy, and that's okay. But the second one is even weirder and creepier, and that's say I love you. And we don't mean that literally because that's beyond creepy. But what we mean is whether you're talking to a tenant or a client or one of our team members, listen for a way to connect with them at a human level and communicate care and concern about who they are. And so we keep a record of sassily moments that people will go, hey, I just talked to this tenant and, you know, in talking to him, I found out that their dog died. And we were talking for a few minutes and we took about 10 minutes and shared stories. She was able to tell me about her dog and we just really had a great connection about her dog. Or, you know, they'll post, they'll say, hey, could you guys just pray for those of you who pray? Can you pray for this tenant? Her dad is in the hospital. And like we tell them, hey, I don't care if you have 40-minute phone calls. I'm not recording how many phone calls you make or take. I'm recording, do you connect with people in mm-hmm. those things? And do you have those sassily moments? So that's one of the big things that we measure is, are we connecting with people on a human level? Because mm-hmm. We feel like a human connection matters.
That's great. I mean, going back to that, it's one of the huge benefits of working with a third party vendor is, I mean, that right there is a lot of work, right? I mean, for us to be able to manage all of that, that's, additional staff members that we have to hire, right? And to manage all those reportings. I mean, you guys keep us on our toes too. I mean, when you're looking at, you know, how many orders we fulfilled that year, you know, and they're down, your people are coming to us and say, hey, look, like your numbers are down. What's going on? I remember that actually a couple months ago. Yeah. You know, I got a scare because I was like, what do you mean? Are we not doing inspections? Like, what's going on? Is there something broken in my process is not giving you guys the orders, right? Because, again, I mean, if we're not doing those inspections, then, I mean, issues pop up and it ultimately costs everybody money. So it is like huge working with third party vendors like yourself. I mean, it saves us. It really does.
I totally forgot you guys scheduled all the inspections with the tenants directly. Yeah. I was like, man, I love Phil even more.
and all those no shows and all these, you know, I'm sure they deal with a lot out there.
Yeah, so just the time on the phone scheduling all that. It's a,
you know, for the I know you talk to a lot of property managers and we do as well. We're part of a franchise and we talk to a lot and help a lot of new franchises coming into the system which listen to the show. And sometimes it's like that leap of faith or taking that first step into you know, onboarding with OnSite or Second Nature, whoever it is, right? What advice would you give them starting out?
Say that again. What advice would you give
like a new franchise?
Onboarding a new vendor?
Right. Somebody that's maybe on the fence and doesn't pull the trigger to hire a third party vendor.
They think they can do it better themselves versus letting go. Well,
Here's one of the things that I would very highly tell them to, or highly recommend them to consider. What is your special sauce? What is it that makes you special? So for instance, when you do your taxes, no one has ever gotten a letter from the IRS going, hey, by the way, your paperwork was A+. We're going to give you a discount because you did such a great job filling it out. Like, you either do it right or you do it wrong. Mm-hmm. There's not a, you know, this, what we're really great at is filling out our tax paperwork, right? So you want to outsource that because mm-hmm. that's a function that can be completed, right? So you've got to decide what is it that makes your business unique? What is it that what is your special sauce that makes you distinct? Own that. Focus your time on that. Let that be the thing that you really invest in. The things that can be done by someone else and can be done as well or better than you can do them, let those things go because those are the things that are holding you back from being the best company that you can be. And we give, you know, in our business, we give the example of, you know, if you're a property manager and you're out there trying to do periodic assessments or move in and move outs and you know, you're in the field and you're doing a report and your phone is ringing or your text messages, your emails are blowing up, you have a decision to make. Mm-hmm. Am I going to answer that? Now I'm distracted. I'm not really paying what's attention. I'm you know, I'm kind of going through the motions and I'm going to miss something, or I'm going to wait until I get back to the office. Now I've got 1,000 things that piled up and who knows what those phone calls were about. Was that something urgent that I should have taken right then? Either way, you're not delivering your best service.
Right.
Because you're focusing on something that someone could have done for you mm-hmm. and could have done a better job because that is their thing, right? The other thing to think about in terms of that is just the staffing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing to me how many people don't consider the cost of when you hire, train, and you know, do quality control on somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you're posting the ad, you're going through the interview process, you find the candidate, you go through the training process, then you got to quality control them to make sure that they learned what you wanted to make. Then you finally get them where you want them to go. And they're like, by the way, I'm moving. by the way, I got another job. Mm-hmm. And you start that treadmill over and over and over again. So just getting that off your plate, because that is a massive distraction from your core business.
Right.
You didn't open to do those things. So if there are things that you can go, I'm going to hire somebody to do that thing for me, and them hiring and maintaining a staff is their problem. Mm-hmm. If they can do it as well, if not better than you, outsource that.
Yeah.
Because it's something that you no longer have to have your focus distracted on, and you can do the thing that you set up. You know, there aren't a lot of property managers who opened a business going, you know what, I'm going to open this business because I want to do property reports. like, there's well, just not much of that out
some
there.
Some might. Just no, I'm just kidding.
But, and in fairness, there are some people that is their special sauce.
Yeah.
We're not for everyone. They should not outsource that. Mm-hmm. If they're hanging their hat on, the thing that I'm going to do the best is make sure that I've got boots on the ground and I know intimately the relationship with the tenants and I know every nook and cranny of the house. If that's your distinctive, own that. Stay with that. Everyone has to decide what's their special sauce and what makes them distinct in the marketplace.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of us needed to hear that,
yeah,
right?
I think it was an awesome answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and yeah, I think it was a great response. I told you you're going to bring a ton of value today. So, and that's why we had to do this today. I wanted to know, and it goes kind of along the same lines of that last question, but we have a lot of listeners that are thinking about getting into business, you know, and thinking about making the leap. And with your years of experience in business, what advice would you give them if they're just starting out or thinking about it? Run or I'm just kidding.
I mean, the biggest piece of advice I would say that again.
I said run. Like, yeah, don't do it. But I'm just kidding. But,
right. The biggest piece of advice I would give them is be prepared for it to be. It's like building a house. It always takes more time and more money than you expected it to take. Mm-hmm. Every idea sounds very simple when you think through it cognitively. Well, we're going to do this, and this is how it's going to go. And then you get into it, and you realize there are so many more facets to being an entrepreneur, to being a business owner, of things that you can't possibly think about when you're in the planning stages. So plan for that. Plan that it's going to take more time and more money than you expected. and be aware to build in margin in your life for that. Because I'll tell you, I have never met an entrepreneur who started a business that it did not consume them for at least a season.
Yeah.
Because there's just a season of life mm-hmm. that it's going to take over everything. Mm-hmm. Especially people like you who have like 30 businesses. I don't even know how you guys.
We I'm have not five. Sure when you
five. Five.
Five, not 30.
And it does consume us at times. So we have multiple seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
no. I would also say, you know, and there's obviously a risk for failure, but gosh, it can be rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But just understand it's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And if you're not prepared to ride that roller coaster, if you have to have the positive momentum, entrepreneurship is probably not for you. If you don't have a very high level of resilience that when things go wrong, you go, damn the torpedoes, I'm going to keep going ahead. Entrepreneurship is not for you. You will fail, and you will fail spectacularly.
Yeah.
You've got to persist.
Things will go wrong.
And if you don't have that, that's right. And if you don't have that innately, take a job.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
take a job.
You talked a lot about prepare, right? We tell that to all of, you know, our friends and listeners listening to the show, you know, to always be prepared. But now that we're going into the economy is coming into rough times, and you know, how are you preparing yourself for that and your business for that?
You know, it's such a funny question, Joni, because how do you prepare? I mentioned mm-hmm. that I bought this business in May of 2019. There was something that happened just after that. Maybe you guys heard of a little global pandemic that came immediately
yeah.
after that.
Yeah.
It's a terrific time.
We were growing our gardens during that time, remember, Phil?
That's right. Yes, we were
competing with each other
from 18 hours apart.
That's
right. But you know, the fact of the matter is, you can put yourself in as best a position as humanly possible. And one of the biggest lessons that I learned from COVID is I can't be prepared for everything.
Yeah.
No contingency plan that I had prepared me for something of that magnitude. But what you can do is build as solid a foundation to your business as possible so that when the unexpected happens, don't allow yourself to be maxed out on your bandwidth
mm-hmm.
Because you have to have room to pivot. Thank God we had a team and, you know, just the wherewithal to stop and sit down and go, oh, this is happening.
Yeah.
How do we respond to this? What can we do differently? How does our business survive this? What does this look like? Prepare for the unexpected, and you will never know what that is, but make sure you don't max yourself out financially,
mm-hmm.
And make sure that you don't max yourself out in terms of your human bandwidth. Leave room for total pivots because we had to totally pivot when COVID hit, as did many of us. But you've got to leave yourself margin to hit those curveballs.
Yeah,
great.
That's a great
Love
answer.
It.
What about 2008? You guys were already in business, right? Correct. If 2008, mm-hmm. 2009.
Yep.
So was it similar? And what did you do then? Because it's got to be a similar feel, but. I'm just curious. Like,
well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. And you talk about that. You talk about, you know, what's probably the upcoming downturn.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, in our industry, that's not necessarily a bad thing because, you know, we're going from a season where we increased last year our number of clients by, I think, 19%. Mm. And the number of jobs that we did went down by 1%.
Mm. Wow.
And the reason for that is, the sales market was so hot
mm-hmm.
that our clients' portfolios were shrinking because
right.
so many landlords were selling off their assets.
Right.
But now we're going into a market downturn mm-hmm. where people can't get back out of the property what they put into it. So a lot of people turn to renting their properties, which means there's more business for our clients, which means there's more business for us. And so, you know, in those downturns, sometimes that's a good thing for us. That is something that we anticipate. Even if we keep the same number of clients this year, we think our business will grow because our clients' businesses will grow because there's more need for property managers in that environment.
Hmm.
Yep.
Awesome answer. Something let you get vulnerable on the show. We always ask a vulnerable question, but the I want to know, like, tell me over your years of business, like, maybe because I think a lot of times as an entrepreneur and when I talk to people, you know, there's a lot of fear, you know, especially in becoming an entrepreneur. And so I'm just curious if you've had, and maybe it was the pandemic and COVID and all that you went through there, but maybe just a struggling time and how you overcame it and, you know, either mentally or, you know, what your business did to overcome the struggle. But I'm just curious if there's a time, we've all had them, you know, where we fall flat on our face and how'd you get back up, and, you know, and I think that tells a lot in number one, the leader, but also the business owner. But I think people need to hear those when they're building their businesses and they fall and you know, they're not alone. We've all gone through it. So.
Yeah. I'll tell you a great story that actually came out of the pandemic. And you know, what we're doing, we're boots on the ground and we're actually going into homes, vacant and occupied homes, and doing a walkthrough of the property. You can imagine, especially in the early days of the pandemic, which we didn't know anything about the virus. How was it transmitted? I mean, like, we were still learning so much.
Right.
So you can imagine the reluctance that tenants had to let us into their homes. Mm-hmm. And so we changed so many policies to protect our technicians and to protect the tenants. But even still, no matter what our policies were, tenants would not schedule with us.
Yeah.
And our clients desperately wanted to get inside the properties and see if they were being maintained. They needed that from us, but the tenants wouldn't allow us in. And so we weren't able to serve our clients well. And so we sat down with our team and we said, hey, how do we overcome this? What do we change to change this narrative? It might be one of my proudest moments in business because the answer did not come from me. It came from someone else on our team who thought about people the way that we think about people. And instead of going, well, how do we pressure them? How do we do? They said, hey, how do we meet someone's needs to make it a win-win for us and the tenant? And she said, hey, because I had contacted my team. We have a supplier that we buy all of our smoke alarms, our air filters, our door stops, you know, smoke check, smoke in a can. And they had told us that they had individually wrapped toilet paper, like the paper wrapped toilet paper, like you have it at a hotel or something like that. They had that available. And so I had told my whole team, guys, if you run out of toilet paper, because God, everybody ran out of toilet paper, right? So I said, hey, if you run out of toilet paper, I'm just going to drop ship you some toilet paper. You just let me know that you need it and we'll take care of you. And one of the gals in our marketing team said, well, do we still have access to a vast supply of toilet paper? And I was like, yeah, they've got a vast supply of toilet paper. She said, what if we started giving toilet paper to tenants? And I was like, okay. So they wrote up this letter that instead of, you know, in the past we would send it out and say, hey, it's time for your annual condition report. We need you to schedule it. They started sending out and calling people and saying, hey, you know, now more than ever, we need to make sure that your smoke alarms are working, that everything's going on. And by the way, we know this is a crazy time for everyone. As a gift from your property manager, we're going to be bringing you 6 rolls of toilet paper when we come by. And it went from, you cannot come to my house, to how quickly can you get
you That's know? Hilarious. Wow. I love it.
and it's just one of those things that, I mean, my gosh, my heart just pounded seeing one of my team members going, how do we love on people and help them win and get what we need to get out of it and get our clients to get what they got out of it? I mean, like, it was just one of those things that you look at it and go, this is why you're in business. This is why you do things in the world, is to see these kind of things happen organically in life. It's a beautiful thing.
What a phenomenal story. Yeah, that's awesome. And to think, and who would have thought, right? Just to get more toilet paper. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
When toilet paper becomes the currency, you know the world is upside down.
And we're laughing, but man, I mean,
you could have dropped off lumber there for a while for us.
That would exactly.
That would help. That's exactly right. Yeah. We'll bring a free 2x4.
Yeah. So what's Phil's next? We always ask this on this show. What's your next, Phil? What are you looking to accomplish in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, we actually, we're about to take our software suite and completely burn it to the ground and start back. Because as we've learned from our clients, And as we've learned from the industry and as we've learned ourselves, what it takes to maintain great property awareness, we've become aware that there are ways that we can and should be serving this industry that's not possible with our current software. And we're about to take on a massive rebuild, which is really intimidating and yet really exciting. We believe very firmly that if you're not growing and advancing, you're dying. And so, you know, even though we right now consider ourselves to be the leader in the industry for property awareness, you don't want to get content with that and say, okay, we've arrived. You want to sit and go, how do we do it better? And so we're about to take on a pretty ambitious software project that we think is going to change the way that people think about property awareness. We're pretty excited about it.
Hopefully your bank account's ready as well. You're going to write some big checks.
Yeah, no doubt. That's right. We've certainly been squirreling away nuts for about 3 years just to have enough to get rolling on this, because it is not an inexpensive undertaking.
Yeah. Sure.
So also another common question we ask a lot of our listeners, I mean our guests, is if you could go back, you know, and that wasn't long ago, right? In your 20s when you were young and ambitious. And
He still is ambitious.
what advice would you give yourself if you could go back and into your early 20s?
Yeah, I would say, take the opportunity to learn. You know, you're in your 20s and you think you know everything, but find a mentor. And, you know, if you're in a job, you're not an entrepreneur yet, watch what they do and take notes on, hey, if I ever had a business, what would I replicate from this? What would I avoid from this? What do I like about what they're doing? Talk to people. Again, this is the extrovert in me, but the number of times that I would ask somebody, hey, can I take you to lunch? And just say, hey, I see what you've accomplished in life. Tell me what you think is important. Tell me what you think that I should be learning right now as a 20-something. But don't just assume, well, I'm young, I'm energetic, I'm bright, I've got great ideas, I'm ready to be an entrepreneur. And maybe you are. But no matter where you are, be a learner. Take notes on what's happening around you. Don't just go through whatever you're going through. Find the things that you can learn from that and be a student of life, be a student of business, be a student of people. That voracious appetite for learning will serve you for the rest of your life. And it's never too early or too late to be a learner.
Yeah, that's great. Phil, well, you've added a ton of value today to our business owners, property managers. I just want to say thank you for all that you do for the property management industry to make our jobs easier, for sure. And Phil, can tell us how we can get a hold of you, or how our listeners can get a hold of you.
Yeah, absolutely. You can just go to OnSight Pros, and that's O-N-S-I-G-H-T, like visual sight, onsitepros.com. And you can reach out through our contact us form there, or email me at phil@onsitepros, spelled the same way, .com. And I'd be glad to help any of your listeners out any way I can.
Sweet. Well, we'll have that in the show notes as well. So thank you again. And if you like the show, then, you know, refer to a friend, like it, subscribe to it, and
we'll see you all next week. Yes. No, we appreciate it, Phil. And anything we can ever do for you, please let us know. But thanks again.
See ya.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's so great to talk with you guys again.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.